our first program, Ron Jacobson. Ron Jacobson is an associate professor in the Department of Communication Media and Media Studies. He's also the associate dean of Fordham College at Rose Hill. And thank you. Ron is the author of a book on television research, another book on New Yorker cartoons about television, and he is the co-editor of a book called Communication in Cyberspace, which is also edited, co-edited by Stephanie Gibson and me. I don't know what else to say about him except that he's from California, but we forgive that. Ron Jacobson.
Thank you, Lance. And I think we owe Lance a show of appreciation for all the work he's put into this conference. And of course, he had the vision. A lot of people helped him, and thank you for coming. I think we have a very interesting panel, and without further ado, you've seen the titles of the papers. They're very interesting. I think also the introductions that are in your program are very interesting. So I will read those, and then we'll have each of the speakers talk to you for 15 minutes. Unfortunately, time tells us that we won't be able to have questions and answers after the session, but during the reception tonight at 6 p.m. or immediately after this session, maybe you can talk to these speakers. Our first presenter is Bob Dobbs. Bob was born in Paris and after World War II worked with international intelligence agencies for many decades. He surfaced in 1987 on CKLN-FM in Toronto and began whistleblowing. Two interpretations of Dobbs are circulating in the popular media. One is through the Church of the Subgenius that Dobbs inspired in 1978 in Dallas. The other is on two CDs, Bob's Media Ecology and Bob's Media Ecology Squared, put out in 1992 by Time Again Productions, early students of Marshall McLuhan. The best presentation of Dobbs' work is in his book, Phatic Communion with Bob Dobbs. Today he travels the world explaining our victory over the Android meme, and the tracing of these activities are regularly published in Flipside magazine. The title of Bob's talk today is McLuhan and Holeopathic Quadrophenia, the Mouse That Roared Syndrome. Bob Dobbs.
I'm probably the only person here, other than Lance, who has attended every talk over the last 2 days and intend to talk to attend the subsequent ones following me. So, yeah. It's not endurance, it's just that I feel that besides the documents from the largest archives on McLuhan outside of Langley, Virginia, and the National Archives in Ottawa, to quote McLuhan, I've been gathering ammunition for years and I hope to use it. Besides that, this, I find that every speaker over the last day and a half is supporting what I propose, which may be new. I think it's new, but of course the user is the content, so there'll be lots of arguments over that. And my new view, I think, needs to be supported by as much documentation as it can get. So I'm hoping Lance will put me at the end of the anthology so that I can include every talk that went before to support what I'm going to say. So, again, to quote McLuhan, I'd like to clear the air of FUG, F-U-G. I would say that since everything in Marshall's work replays Finnegan's Wake, but it is a Finnegan's Wake made up of the dialogue between Joyce, Yeats, Eliot, Pound, and Lewis, so not just Joyce, I would say, since the wake is the search for the letter, that one letter published in the Letters of McLuhan that I would say articulates his program, and is everything he did after that is consistent, subject to the effect of Sputnik. That letter is the one to Ezra Pound, June 22nd, 1951. So check out the letter sometime and read that letter. It's very interesting. McLuhan states the problem that he is going to deal with. All right. Beginning with 1960, I'm going to deal with the period 1960 to 1990 and using the McLuhanist theme that the effects precede the causes. Literary culture dealt with the causes creating the effects. Electronic culture dealt with the effects merging with the causes. But I think McLuhan understood how the effects preceding the causes was a result of what happened in October 1957, the Sputnik flight. Now, it's interesting. That's 100 years after Baudelaire's Flowers of Evil. I'd say give McLuhan 3 years to assess the impact of that in 1960, and he begins to talk about the satellite environment that early, 1960-61. Anybody wants the proof of that? These are in rare articles. Unless you're a McLuhan scholar and read every article, you're not going to find 1960-61 that easy, but you will see it in 62, 63, 64. He goes a lot into Telstar. But what's interesting, as early as 1962, he is saying that television is archetypal. Now, the old theme that McLuhan used was that a new technology becomes the last word, then it becomes a cliche, then it becomes an art form, and then it becomes archetype. So by 1962, he's saying that television is archetypal. So that means the computer environment, which comes after television but before the satellite, is an art form. And this is proven in a quote from a journalistic article in the Star Weekly magazine, March 10, 1962, by a relative of mine, a well-known Canadian writer named Kildare Dobbs. To encounter McLuhan is to be drawn immediately into a dialogue, his word, he says, that is brilliant, bizarre, stimulating, exhausting. He does not fool around with talk about the weather, but blowing a little cigar smoke like votive incense over his listener takes off at once for outer space. In orbit with him, one looks down to see the comfortable world of familiar facts diminished to the scale of molecules. Long vistas of history yawn frighteningly. The slow accretion of human experience over the centuries races by like a speeded up movie. The discourse becomes even more exciting and alarming when one realizes that this is no carefully planned, guided tour of theories already worked out and tested, but the actual adventure of improvising and elaborating new ones. Now, what's interesting about this quote is that he's describing the experience of McLuhan in person as going in orbit, literally, like a satellite, and looking back at the planet. However, he says that McLuhan is not working from any planned, guided tour of theories, but that it's an improvised thing. I propose that it wasn't improvised, that it was planned. So I go back to 1960 to a quote to illustrate the computer as art form. This is a letter to Jacqueline Tyrwhitt, December 1960. Today, with electronics, we have discovered that we live in a global village, and the job is to create a global city, city in italics, as center for the village margins. The parameters of this task are by no means positional. With electronics, any marginal area can become center, and marginal experiences can be had at any center. Perhaps the city needed to coordinate in concert the distracted sense programs of our global village will have to be built by computers in the way in which a big airport has to coordinate multiple flights. So there he is. He wants to move out of the global village and turn it into an art form via the computer. By 1962, the effect is as a satellite, and he's talking about the satellite. Now, the main point that Marshall says in understanding media is not that the medium is the message. He says that to explain the changes caused by the medium is easy. What is really difficult to explain is the numbness or the ignoring of that fact. And he proposes to explain what that numbness is. So, removing the idea of the global village, because he wants to look at it as a global city programmed by the computer. But by 62, 63, 64, the satellite environment has now approached, he says, art form status. He moves to the global theater. Now, the global theater is not a term he uses until the late 60s, and there's a reason. So, by 1960, if he was given the chance, with his ambition and the knowledge he accumulated through his interaction with Joyce and the other writers I mentioned, with Innes as a front, if he was given control of the United Nations, he would implement the computer in a programming situation. Now, that was not likely to happen. So, as he says in Gutenberg Galaxy, to explain the numbing effect of television, he says in particular, would be futile at all. It would be futile to discuss it. So that means the applied knowledge, in the sense of efficient causality, and I would see the four causes as symbolically relating between Joyce, Yeats, Pound, and Eliot. Efficient causality, to apply the knowledge that he felt he acquired, and therefore mock the academics in the 50s, as stated in the June 22nd letter, that the research was a red herring by the others, but not his. Since that wasn't likely to happen, he was left with a strategy to, in a sense, be an artist. But I maintain that he wasn't an artist, that he didn't want to be an artist. There are many artists in New York, in Toronto, who were around McLuhan in the 50s and 60s and didn't understand, when they did performance pieces with him, how he always knocked them. And it's interesting, because I think if he was given the chance to implement his understanding of the numbness, then he would be a doctor. He would be dealing with a, as he called himself, a pastor, the new germs, the new diseases. Now, he was always ready to do that if given the chance, and probably as an existential move, he would study the effects of that if given the chance to become the director, literally, of the Center for Culture and Technology. But since he was not going to achieve that too quickly, he moves into a theatrical position in the global theater. Because the technological cycle had been completed, he sees that television creates fusion, where the users are inside the machine and the machine is inside them. But he understands that the satellite is something that it goes beyond the dynamic of the crowds presented by the history of media. He sees media as crowd behavior interactive with machines. When the satellite transcends the crowd dynamic, which is completed with the fusion of television, and in that, the computer is the interval between the television and the satellite, seeing that there was a kind of autonomy for the crowds represented by the satellite could be detached, like the eye, from the historical cycle of crowd involvement with media. So, here he is. He's a doctor in a burning global village, where if given the chance, after his classification of the symptoms, which he did in the 50s, and his diagnosis, he then would be able to prescribe the computer's art form. But since that was not likely, then he had to move into the idea of creating something, theatrical efforts, that would be not science fiction, which was what he said Mechanical Bride was, not satire. Since satire was futile. So what could he do? He could remove himself from the scene and have the media be the actors that he would direct. So you have in Understanding Media the statement, TV caused drastic changes in radio programming and in the form of the thing, italicized. TV caused drastic changes in radio programming and in the form of the thing or documentary novel. I say that the documentary novel is what he did, but it isn't him, he is not in it. So, if you go back to something he wrote in the 50s about the values of separateness, you can see that he could retrieve the book, which was his concern in the 50s. What use would the book have, knowing its effects and services and disservices? So, this little mouse, the book medium, retrieved as an archetype, would be like the story in Understanding Media, the newspaper story of the mouse attacking a cat that it sees on TV. This mouse, he could figure out a way to make it roar. So, in the global theater, which was a programmed environment, he could mime the programmers as a great playwright. But the great playwright would be the logos as experienced through literacy. I would say speech and writing. You can see how that resonates with what other people have said earlier, as Donald Thiel has said. The integration of speech and print as a retrieved antidote to recreate separatism of perception, because he felt that the private citadel of consciousness was not affected by media. So perhaps that is the Logos. That's the religious part of himself. Now, that is all that's left when language is subsumed in these new media and then disappeared by the effect of the satellite. So he would bring back the book to offer temporary relief, or as he says in referring to Lewis, a carapace, in relation to the mystical attractions of the electric light. He says that in 1969. The mystical attractions of the electric light. So if you look at Gutenberg Galaxy and Understanding Media, I think this structure is the Apelian. The Apelian is a very interesting hidden form that Marshall writes about in Cliched Archetype, that he says, it is not so much a story of the individual quest for perfection as it is a history of collective crime and punishment, an attempt to justify the ways of God to man. Now, Ted Carpenter told me that when Marshall had his surgery in the late 50s, had that operation during the making of Project 69, he wished he'd died. He recovered, and he wished he had a stroke, apparently. He wished he'd recovered. He wished he hadn't recovered because he said that he felt he was speaking God, that God was speaking through him. Now, if we define God as a Logos, I think the fact that he privately talked about the alphabet as an important medium at the time of Jesus Christ, that he saw a religious dimension in the alphabet, and he could see that in the book. But on top of that, he also was in a spiritual crisis because he knew that was obsolete. So you have Gutenberg Galaxy as part one of the Apelian, which is always a two-book structure with an interface, and book one is a retrieval of the Logos' archetype, but book two, Understanding Media, is a cliche probe of his own time, retrieving the past, retrieving the I. Now, Understanding Media has 33 chapters, so probably it has an embed, and Donald Thiel can elaborate on particular conversations he had with McLuhan on this level. 33 chapters refers to the Freemasonic conspiracy that he's rumored to be interested in all his life. It's the 33 degrees of Freemasonry. Now, that would be the content of the book. The book was the period. The Gutenberg Galaxy, he said, was the period when people could conspire and take over large groups of people. So if he's going to retrieve the eye and the book, he has to include the conspiracy. So that's the hidden mapping of the 33 degrees and 33 chapters in Finnegan's Wake. How's the time? About a minute. So what you have is the satellite is retrieved, is a retrieval of the conspiracy, because it's the eye, it's the prince of the air. Then from there, in the late 60s, the satellite environment is superseded by the instant replay and the chip. So to move along quickly, what happens is that he then comments on his previous process in the books from War and Peace and Global Village on, 68 on, where he lays out a commentary on the obsolescence of the global theater. Now, all of this predicts the hologram. He said the hologram comes after these media. Now, the hologram gets subsumed between 1960 and 77, and you have nothing but retrievals. Then you have, and that is a world of a memory theater. Continuing, when the android meme shows up in the middle 80s, that is a retrieval of William Burroughs' biological theater. Now, I have just finished my first paragraph of a long dissertation that goes on for at least 25 years. So I will not accept any complaints of my pretending there's a finish line. So anybody who wants to deal with some of this stuff later, they can read the article. But we're getting close, right? I want it to be an anti-environment to McLuhan and not be media res. I prefer to be stuck at the beginning. So I rest my case, even though you haven't heard it yet.
Great. Thanks, Bob. A little performance theater here, too. Great.
No.
Our next speaker is Marvin Kittman. Marvin has been the TV critic of Newsday since 1969. His column in